Online Podcast 225. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Online Podcasts. I'm not going to waste too much time. If you don't know who I am, you have to go find out on last week's show or whenever. But today we have a guest, and it's been somebody that I wanted to talk to at a very personal level for a long time. And I just need to find the motivation. Well, actually, every time I do talks like this, I like to be able to already have questions that I want to ask before I actually invite guests here on my show to chat with us. So today we have Tristan from jadedcity.com, which I just did a show with him last week. But hi, Tristan.
Hello, how are you?
I am good. So before we go into the questions, I don't have a list, unlike you, very organized. And isn't it funny and almost interesting to see how each podcaster do their show, like go through the whole recording process? You know, we all do it differently.
Everyone does it differently, and it's kind of I like seeing how different people do it.
Me too.
Things.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so the reason why the moment when I start to think about having you chatting with me, a so-called interview on my show, was when you go through the name change of your website from Interesting Podcast to what was it called before?
Interesting. It was Interesting Podcast, and I changed the name to Jaded City.
Yeah, and so that was the moment where I start to think, this guy can be interesting to talk to, and so and it stemmed from that. And when I asked the question, bring back why I say that. But, you know, you're a fellow podcaster, and you I didn't know too much about you besides what I see online and what I heard online, because I'm not a reader, because I like to hear, because I like to listen while I do other things. So what sparked my interest about talking to you is pretty much your life, you know, what led you to who you are today and all that. I've read some of the stuff online, but I thought that it's an interesting and it's kind of my thing to really dig into people's personal life.
And you're a nosy bitch.
I am a nosy bitch. You know what? The technical term is called interview, but right, okay. It's called interview. You know, now that I have a platform that I can say I'm doing an interview, it's just me being nosy and trying to poke my nose into other people's lives and sharing it with a few people while I'm on that road, right? So, Tristan, let's let the questions begin.
Okay, bring it on.
Okay, so Jaded City, what made you change the name to Jaded City?
We have to rewind in time a little bit.
Okay.
I had a website called Interestin.net, and this was basically just a blog, and I've been blogging for a very long time. And when I first started the website, it was all about me and my personal life and, you know, things I've gone through and stuff like that. And then I started the podcast, and when I started the podcast wasn't necessarily all about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that it would be good to go through a name change because I wanted to bring in other people and other points of view. And calling it the Interest in Podcast, it just
narrow.
It kind of makes it all about me, and right. I didn't want it to be all about me. So, and also I want to branch into other areas, you know, Jaded City right now, you know, it's not just me blogging, you know, it's a blog and it's a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of different points of views that I bring in to the show and into the blog. So I figured that I needed to change the name.
I see.
Do you understand?
I do.
Or am I speaking nonsense?
No, you're making sense. So Jaded City, does it refer to a certain city that you are in, or is it just a name that you come up with?
It's kind of like a in a way a state of mind, because for those people that don't know, the definition of jaded is, you know, kind of, there's a lot of different reasons. The definition of jaded is, you know, a cynical person who has seen everything and is surprised by nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been through so much through my life.
Which is what we'll dig.
I'm just not surprised by anything. Anything I see, I'm just like, yeah, okay.
Been there, done that.
Not necessarily been there, done that, but, you know, I'm not shocked by many things, and that's where I came up with jaded. And I live in a city, so I just put the two together, Jaded City.
Good. Which city do you live in?
I live in New York City, actually.
New York City, the big,
which is a
gigantic
very
jaded
apple. City.
Yeah, it is. A gigantic big whore apple, right?
I mean, a naked woman could walk down the street in New York City,
and nobody would
and
care.
Very, very few people would even turn their head.
Well, that's true. That's what I like about New York City is, you know, nobody cares. You know, it's just like you just go about doing your own things.
I've seen that so many times. It's just whatever.
Right. Okay. Let's start from there. Then we'll go back to your childhood a little bit, and then we'll bring it back to the city again. Where were you born?
I was born in upstate New York, Syracuse, which is kind of a small town.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has like 800,000 to a million residents.
Okay, what year was that in?
That was way, 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 way back in 1977.
Oh,
I was born March 24th at 7:34 a.m.
And of course, you know, the things that I ask might be too personal. I may not be, since you're so jaded now. can I say your birthday?
March 24th, 1977.
Okay, March 24th is actually my cousin's birthday too.
Oh, so,
yeah, and
first week Aries, we're powerful.
We are, and we are a week apart. You and I mean, not really, because you know I'm older. But as far as birthday is concerned,
when's your birthday?
1974, March 31st.
Wow, so you're. Is that first or second week Aries?
That would be, I don't know. You know,
first week Aries are the most powerful.
In 1974, well, I'm powerful regardless.
You're fabulous, darling.
Oh, I'm fantabulous. So let's get back to you. So you were born in 1977,
mm-hmm.
and to a military family.
Yes, I was my father and mother actually were in the military.
Mm-hmm.
To make you understand, I'm the youngest of six kids.
Mm-hmm.
But most of my older brothers and sisters are like, well, I guess now they're in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
The closest in age to me is my brother Jared, and he's 2.5 years older than me. But everybody else is like 13 years older than me, because my parents
so
took
you're a break. You're the baby then.
Yeah, I'm the baby.
Mm-hmm.
On my mother's side. My dad had a few illegitimate children, but you know.
Are you still in touch with them? Your half siblings?
My half siblings? Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
Not at all.
I speak to my mom a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not a lot, like once a month maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't speak to my father at all.
Okay, we'll come back to that too. I'm so nosy.
I'm sorry. Am I getting ahead of?
No. I'm just, you know, setting out things in my head so that I can ask. I don't even like write down notes, so I may forget. So who cares? I'm so the completely opposite of who you know your show. You have everything all planned out.
Some have accused me of being anal retentive, but I'm really not.
Yeah. Right. And then. So, so you were born, and what for? What? How did your childhood become an influence of who you are today? I mean, I know it must be different having to move around in the military family.
Well, yeah. It's kind of strange because unless you were a military brat, you could not understand what I went through. And mm-hmm. most military families, they move around every 4 years. Mm-hmm. That's the standard. But my father had a job where his job was to move around and reorganize military offices that were failing.
Ah.
So we moved around probably about every year.
Wow.
So between the ages of birth and 16 years old, it was like 9 months to a year in each city. So I've lived all over the East Coast. And it was a blessing in a way, mm-hmm. like when I was younger, because it was always cool to move. But it became a curse after a while because, you know, you'd make friends and then you'd lose them.
Right.
And after a period of time, it's just like, you know, why make friends?
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of made me, you know, I'm a very, if you listen to my podcast, you'd think I'm a very outgoing person, but I tend to keep people at a distance.
Mm-hmm. In real life?
In real life, yeah. I tend to keep people at a certain distance because I'm so used to, you know, losing people.
Right.
And that kind of, you know, it led to all kinds of psychological problems later in life, but, you know.
Yeah, and that's why I'm asking, you know, because it's, I can only imagine, I cannot really comprehend that, but I can only imagine how that would do to you. It's like, especially once your family is not the only thing anymore, you know, when you're young, it's okay because you're always with the family. And then now you start to have friends. I think you're socializing outside of your family. It would make a huge impact on you if you have to move so frequently, I would think.
It's just, I never really, you know, it's the negative effect it had on me is that, you know, I don't get close to people very easily. I don't trust people very easily.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of distant.
Okay.
I guess you could call me a loner. Like, I'm very friendly. Like, if I'm hanging out in a group of people, like, I'm very nice.
Right.
And, you know, I want to get to know people, but at the same time, I'm kind of keeping them at a certain distance because
you can only get this close.
I'm kind of programmed to the point where I don't want to get hurt. Because if you have like a best friend,
yes,
and you move and that relationship severs,
mm-hmm.
that hurts.
I know.
It doesn't matter what age you are. That hurts to mm-hmm. lose someone you care about.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through that repeatedly throughout my life. And I got to the point where I would kind of build this wall up around myself so it wouldn't hurt as much. It always hurted, but it wouldn't hurt as much.
You know what? That is so interesting because I can so totally relate it to that. I think I've been briefly touching on some of those recently. It's like a defense mechanism that you... Well, for me, it's like my fat defense mechanism. It's like I would say that I'm fat before anybody calling me fat because it's, you know, if you announce to the whole world that I know that I'm fat, so don't come telling me that I'm fat. It's sort of the same thing happens to friendship as well. Sometimes I'll find myself sabotaging the relationship or the friendship before it actually gets bad. Sort of like, you know, I'm going to hurt it first so that I won't get hurt. Do you experience that?
You know, I've been in that position before where I've been in a relationship. See, the weird thing with me is I've never had any kind of serious connection with anyone, and I think that stems from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yet when I do get into a serious relationship, I tend to sabotage it.
Yeah. I can so relate to that.
Not intentionally.
I know.
I think subconsciously.
I so totally agree. I think it becomes sort of like a thing that you do naturally is that you don't usually have the opportunity to care that much, and now that you do, you overcare it, and that becomes sometimes a something that hurts a relationship. Plus, I also think that sometimes it's a defense mechanism that we ourselves built subconsciously. You know, we ruin that relationship so that the other person cannot ruin it. I think I talk about that as a party invitation. It's like when somebody invites you to a party, and when you go there, the person is not there, or the person is with you for a while and then they left. And then, so in order to not get hurt in that way, you would leave the party before that possibility of that might happen, then you would actually ruin it right
exactly
there.
It's funny though, because, you know, like I have friends I talk to on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought of this second. I'm always the one to hang up first.
Yeah, you say, I'm okay, like, yeah.
Right when I start to get the impression that the conversation is about to end,
uh-huh.
I'll be like, you know, oh, I have to go.
Yeah.
You know, I have so that
you don't have to be the one
to
being told to quit, you know?
Yeah. I just have to be the one to cancel.
I can so relate to that. You know, we can say that our background is entirely different. And that's the beauty of, I think, sharing people's stories, you know, whoever it is. The people's stories are just so interesting. And I think we can all connect in some level. And I can so totally understand that whole situation. You know, you just want us to call it quit before somebody else is going to do that so that you won't get hurt.
Well, we are all different, yet we are all the same.
Yeah. See, and I like to dig, and part of the reason why is I have to be somewhat connected to that person. Either I listen to the shows, or I talk to them in real life, and their life sort of makes me think and makes me questions, because you are one of those people that I only get to know when you are a podcaster. Like, you started podcasting, and that's how I heard about you. I heard about, what is the other website? The Get Cute. Queercasters.com is how I get to know you. And then, you know, some Archer's show, and then I start listening to your shows. But, you know, it makes me question. So my next set of questions would be, at what point did you decide to go and leave the family or you know, leave your hometown and go elsewhere?
Well... Well, this.
Well, you don't really have a home.
This comes into the fact that, you know, obviously I'm gay,
uh-huh.
I'm a gay man.
Yeah.
And
are you?
I first figured out I was gay when I was a little kid. It was. I actually remember the moment when I realized I was.
Oh,
a gay
isn't
man.
That precious? How old were you?
I was. I don't remember how old I was. I was in kindergarten.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
And we were playing in the. This, you know, the playground or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and we were climbing a jungle gym,
mm-hmm.
and there was this boy above me who was my friend, and I looked up and I saw his butt, and I just remember having this desire to lick his ass crack.
Wow, you were way ahead.
And it went on from there. So I always knew I was gay, and I hated myself for it for so long, because my family was very religious.
Okay.
And, you know, that's not acceptable or whatever. I came out to my friends when I was like 13, and some of them accepted it, some of them didn't. And when I was 16, I told my mom. And she basically, her reaction was she cried.
Mm-hmm.
She cried for days. I mean, she cried. And I was kind of confused at the time. I didn't really...
You didn't understand her reaction?
I didn't really understand the reaction. And when she got done crying, she said, whatever you do, don't tell your father.
Okay. And your father is still, you're still in, he's still in the family at the time?
I mean, yeah, you're still he's in touch still in the family.
Okay.
And, of course, I had to tell my dad,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you just, you know, I know there's a lot of people that think that, you know, I'm not going to tell my parents because I don't want to hurt them or whatever.
Yeah.
But I figure you only have one life and you only have one chance to live it. You might as well, I mean, what is a relationship if the person that you have that relationship with doesn't really know who you are?
Yeah, I agree.
So I told my father. He didn't react to it as well as my mother did, and it just got very tense. My parents, I a lot of times mentioned to people that my dad kicked me out of the house. He didn't kick me out of the house. He didn't say, you have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But through his actions and his words and his emotions and everything... he made me feel very unwelcome.
Hmm. So it was very cold between the two of you.
Very cold, very distant, like, just like, you know, I don't really know how to explain it, but I left home when I was 16 years old.
Okay, so it's after you come out.
After I came out, yeah. And, you know, my life went on from there.
And which city did you go to? Or where did you go after
you left
the house?
Well, I was living in Daytona Beach at the time. Uh-huh. And I moved out and I lived in this little tent in an abandoned field.
Oh, so did you move out from your house but still in where your family, the same city?
The same city. It was okay. Daytona Beach, Florida, and I moved out of my parents' house and I moved into... Well, first I bounced from, like, all my friends' house. I bounced around a little bit. Mm-hmm. But
how was that like?
It was kind of awkward. It was...
Was it liberating or sad? Or what was the emotion that you're going through at that time?
I was going through every possible emotion that you could think of.
Okay, and pick one. I mean, no, I'm saying that you've gone
through...
There's
no way to really... describe right, that right. kind of emotion.
I think I understand, yeah.
Because you got to realize that your parents, you love your parents, mm-hmm. of course. And for them not to return that love and to feel unwanted
right.
is Hurtful. Just not a feeling that anybody wants to have.
Right.
And so I bounced around for a while and then I lived in a tent and then I got a job. And I started to work my way up from there.
Yeah, were you still attending school at that time?
Well, I dropped out of school because I had to work full time.
Okay. So 16, you dropped out of school?
I dropped out of school and I started working full time.
Okay.
Taco Bell, which is like the worst fucking job on planet Earth.
Taco Hell! Wow. And then what was the turning point, you know, from all those, you know, hopping around? And you said you ended up in a hotel or something that you're staying in?
When I was 17 years old, I moved to Las Vegas.
Okay.
From Daytona Beach. And I didn't know anybody. Like, one of my friends had a friend in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any gay people at this time. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends had a friend in Las Vegas that was gay. Mm-hmm. Never met him, never spoke to him, nothing.
Right.
But all I knew is that I was gay, and there was this other person that lived in Las Vegas that was gay. So I moved, I just, like, pawned all my shit, and I moved to Vegas. And we met, and we started dating, and it actually was a very violent, abusive relationship. I lived there for, like, 9 months, worked a couple different jobs, dated this guy, we actually ended up moving back to Daytona Beach later. I don't know why we moved, but we moved back.
How old was he? I mean, age difference?
He was about 3 years older than me.
Okay, so about 19,
yeah.
20?
19 or 20 years old.
Okay.
We moved back to Daytona, and shortly after that, we broke up because... like I said, it was a very abusive relationship.
Like physically abusive? Or
physically abusive, yeah. The final straw came when, I don't know, it was, there was some sort of bill due, like we had to pay a bill or something like that,
uh-huh.
And I went out and bought cigarettes,
mm-hmm.
And he, like, tore all my cigarettes up. Because he said, you know, you shouldn't be buying cigarettes, you should be paying the bills, which, you know, he had an ounce of, you know, he was right. I should have been paying bills.
Uh-huh.
But I bought cigarettes, and he threw me up against the wall and held a knife to my neck.
Wow.
And the relationship ended there.
Were you scared?
Well, I was terrified. I mean, someone throws you up against the wall and holds a knife to your neck. You're scared.
Was it the first time, though? Physical?
It was the first time a knife was involved, but other times it was just fists.
Wow. Hitting
you? It was my first real gay relationship, first real relationship, so
and
I didn't really know how to react to it at first.
Were you very emotionally attached to him, even though he's physically abusive to you?
He was the first gay person, you know, I ever dated. Yeah, I mm-hmm. was.
Yeah,
I felt completely alone in the
that's
world.
That's very common for a lot of abusive relationships. Is you know, they're so important to you that you can just ignore the physical abuse that they make.
Well, you have to take my past into account. I mean, I had moved around so much.
Mm-hmm.
I was used to losing people. I was used to being alone. I never really felt love.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the situation. It was the first, you know, gay relationship
right.
that I ever had.
Somebody you open up to.
that I was allowed to be myself. So, yeah, I didn't know what a relationship was. I didn't know what love was. I was afraid to lose it. So I put up with a lot of shit because of it.
Now, thinking back as a child or even during your teenage years, when was the first time you ever felt love? Even within the family? You mentioned something about, it's the first time experiencing love. Have you ever felt the love that, at least the love that you perceive as being love? Something that you can actually feel? Is it something that never quite happened in the family? Oh my gosh, my phone is ringing.
Well, answer it.
I won't. I don't know this number. Well, let's just let the answering machine answer the phone.
Well, I have to urinate. Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll take a pause then. Okay. And the phone call was somebody that I don't want to talk to, and then now Tristan is back from peeing. So let's make the whole world know. So where were we talking?
Let me finish. Let me answer your question.
Right. Yes. Love.
There's a lot of times throughout my life that I thought I was in love.
Uh huh.
But if I was going to answer the question of when the first time I was actually in love, it wasn't until really just recently, the year 1999, and I dated this guy. And he's the only guy I really ever think that it was actually true love.
Mm.
Well, I guess I could say two-way love. Like, I loved him, he loved me.
Oh, I see. Now, what about, I think my question was more, and it could be open up to family members, friends. When was the first time you remember or recall being loved? Like, so you felt somebody loving you, including family members, not just romantic love.
Well, I would have to say my mother loves me.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I felt that is, mm-hmm. In childhood.
Right.
And
then you grow up and things change. I mean, not that she doesn't love you. It's just that things change. Situations change and all that.
Well, I still think my mother loves me. I think she's the only one in my family that actually loves me.
Wow.
Outside of my family, the only person that I think that's ever really loved me is mm-hmm. the boyfriend that I had in 99,
wow.
or I met in 99. Aside from that, I really haven't experienced it that much.
Okay, now let's hop back. Let's reconnect to the time frame there. You went to Las Vegas and you moved back to Daytona Beach and you ended the abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Well, you were distraught, I assume. You were hurt again.
Well, yeah. I mean, it wasn't anything new to me.
Mm-hmm. How did you deal with those feelings, like being hurt and all that? Do you just...
Well, back then, I just kind of blew it off and I moved on.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, today, I'm sure it has an effect on my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've been hurt many times and, anytime you're hurt, that affects the way you progress through life, but I don't really ever think about it.
And what did you do at that time? So once you broke up with him, and what did you do next?
I just moved on. I got a new job and I moved
in Daytona Beach.
I was living in Daytona Beach mm-hmm. at the time. I got a new job and I moved on.
And what did you do? What city did you move to? What made
After
you move?
Daytona, I moved to Orlando, Florida.
Uh-huh.
And there I met another guy, and he was a cheater.
Mm-hmm.
He basically cheated on me all the time.
Is he older?
He was my age, actually.
Okay.
I was in love with him, but he wasn't in love with me.
Okay. Were you guys living together or not?
Yeah, we were living together. And he ended up kicking me out of the house when we got in a fight once. And then I was homeless for a while. And after that, I moved back to Daytona, where I was homeless for a while.
And, tell me about the feeling and the experience of being homeless. I don't think anybody understands that. So
It's kind of weird because it's. I'm not gonna say I was like didn't have anything to eat because you know you have your soup kitchens and stuff like that,
right?
But just the kind of desperation that you go through.
Do you ever worry? I mean, do you worry day to day, like you know, where am I gonna be tonight?
Well, yeah. I mean, I kind of got my little corner back alley that I slept in, and I worked into my little routine of where I got food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would hit the Dunkin' Donuts dumpster at about 3 a.m. when they threw out their old donuts. You know, I knew the churches and what time they handed out food and everything like that. So, you know, I made my way through it, and mm-hmm. I ended up getting a job, and I got back on my feet, basically. But, I mean, being homeless is... It's not so much... It's mostly boredom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to spend the next 8 hours of this day?
Where do you go, like, say, to the bathroom and clean up and all that? Where do you do that?
Well, you go to the bathroom anywhere. You can. You just piss behind a tree.
Mm-hmm. What about cleaning yourself?
McDonald's and you go to the toilet and they have toilet paper and stuff like that. So
it's something that not many people think about, especially those of you who are listening to this podcast. You know, especially if you're listening to a podcast, meaning you're somewhat well-to-do.
The biggest challenge in being homeless, it's not food, it's not taking your bathroomy duties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking a shit or whatever. That's not the point. The point is that where am I going to sleep tonight and what am I going to do tomorrow and how am I going to get out of this fiasco?
So it's a daily thing that you do that, right? I mean, until you find a job or find a place to stay and all that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you move past it.
And so after that, what is the turning point then? You found a job?
Well, I found a job, and Orlando. After that I moved to an old friend from high school. I moved to Asheville, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and I moved in with her, and then we moved to Charleston, South Carolina, and I got a job and a boyfriend, and everything was going basically pretty well, mm-hmm. and... Then me and my boyfriend broke up, and I moved back to Florida again, where I was homeless again. I've been homeless quite a few times in my life.
See, I knew there's some stories, interesting stories behind that voice. I just know that. And I'm glad that you're sharing, and you're so open about it.
Well, I mean, you know, you got to be open.
Right.
About
and
stuff like that.
Well, for once, at least I, the busybody whore, would really appreciate that because I really appreciate people sharing their stories. I think everybody has a very interesting short story to share, and I'm just glad that you're doing this. And it may look like we may have to break this into two parts, and if we do, it will be the same thing for us, but you know, we may have to break this into two parts. So I may have to end the show a while, but before we do that, we'll save the New York part for the second show. That will be next week, hopefully. Mm-hmm. You know, it depends. And I'm going to plan on doing it next week. So so before we end the show, though, tell me, so you move back to Orlando and you're homeless again. What was the point, what is your biggest turning point from where you were in Florida that brought you to New York?
Well, I was living in Orlando for a while, and then I moved back to Daytona Beach. Mm-hmm. I was working at Taco Bell,
mm-hmm.
and first I was living on the street. I was hanging out with this group of drifters that kind of drifted from city to city, and
uh-huh.
they came up with different ways to get money. I was working, like half of us were working, the other half of them were hustling on the street to get money. And we basically went
homeless?
Night to night.
All homeless?
We stayed in different hotels.
Oh, okay, hotels, okay.
And eventually I saved up the money and I got an apartment. And I moved in, I basically rented the living room, a couch,
mm-hmm.
of somebody that I worked for. And, you know, one day I just woke up And I just started crying because I'm like, you know, I was 20 years old at, no, I was older. I was 22 years old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm 22 years old. I've been homeless 3 or 4 times. You know, I need to get my shit together. My life sucks.
So that must be a big turning point for you, right? It's a lot.
It was just a moment. I don't even know where it came from, but mm-hmm. it was just a moment in my life that says I need a new beginning. I need a new start. And from moving around so much when I was a kid, I'm used to like going and starting over. So basically, I woke up this one morning. I was crying. I went into work. It was payday. I asked for my check, and as soon as I got my check, I started crying again. And my boss is like, what the fuck's wrong? And I looked at my boss and I'm like, I quit. And I left. He just had a stunned look on his face. I left my work. I went straight home, packed a bag, a very small bag. I left from home. I went to the airport. I bought a one-way plane ticket to New York. I hopped on the plane. I flew to New York, not knowing anybody in New York City. No job, no money, no place to stay, nothing. Well, I had money. I had like $30 in my pocket. I stepped off the plane in New York City, and that's where the next phase of my life began.
Well, which is also the next podcast.
Which is the next podcast. We'll have to stay tuned next week.
All right. Now, we would also touch on the eights ride that you're...
Yes, you can visit jadedcity.com in the upper right-hand corner. There is a link to click on to donate to the AIDS ride. I have to raise. I'm riding 560 miles this summer, over 7 days, and I have to raise $3,500. So
you have to tell people to come listen to these two shows. I think
you have to listen to the
people.
Next show to
people
understand.
People who listen to somebody's stories would do differently when they donate, or and it's not donating to you, you know, it's donating
no,
to...
No, none of the money goes to me. It goes to a lot of different organizations to find a vaccine for AIDS, to help prevent people from getting AIDS, and a lot of people think, oh, what, I can't afford to give a lot of money. I can, you know, I got 10 bucks in my bank account. You know, 10 bucks can print 1,000 flyers.
Right.
And those 1,000 flyers can be distributed in gay bars free of charge.
May touch
and
one or two or more
if
souls.
If so much as one person gets a hold of one of those flyers and it causes them to put a condom on, you've saved a life. So the question is $10 worth saving a human life?
And next week we'll talk more about that in depth, and I think sharing your personal stories would really, really change how people donate, and we'll talk about that next week. And for this week, thank you so much, Tristan, for doing this, and we'll get to chat with him later. Oh, I just got disconnected, but anyway, I'm going to end this show, and I will, let me see, let me talk to him, and see. Hang on just a second. All right, and let's see. Oh, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, go to jadedcity.com and also go to onlinepodcast.com for all the links if you want to. You can donate for him or come back next week and actually check out his more of his stories of why he's doing this ride. And thank you again, Tristan, for sharing your wonderful personal stories. I think it's very empowering to some people, definitely to me. Thank you so much to all of you who are listening to this. You can comment at onlinepodcast.com or call me at 816. No, I almost gave you the real number. What is it called? The new number. I almost gave you my new my real number. 206, not 816, 206-888 John, and leave me comments there. And I hope you have a wonderful Monday, and don't forget to smile. Bye.